Everybody, welcome to Off the First. It's October 19th, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for joining us today. We've got some things to talk about. Some of it will be live-related. Some of it will be done with eye-rolling, very obviously through my words. But we're going to have a good time today. First, I'm going to tell you about our friends at Swanee's Golf. They're the presenting sponsor of our show. Check them out at swanees.co and use the promo code GolfNewsNet25, GolfNewsNet25, to get 25% off your first order. It's fall. We've been talking about it here on the show. Very excited for the fall season. I've been wearing vests and jackets. It's great to have it back in the lineup. Hoodies. Oh, it's hoodie season. I have way too many of those in my closet. Now I get to use them again. So, go over to swanees.co. Pick yourself up a couple hoodies. They have a corduroy anorak jacket, which is awesome. Love it, love it, love it. Check it out, swanees.co. All right. I want to talk a little bit about LIV to start today and their team championship. So they have their final event of the year. It starts tomorrow. So recording this on Thursday. And it's a team event, right? So they have team components to the individual events, the 13 that they had, the last one being in Saudi Arabia. Last week, by the way, just for a moment, can we talk about the old trope of, I wanted to play less golf and travel less. Well, you may be playing less golf. That is possible for some players. Although I will also then do another segue and say, there are some players that I have read transcripts of around Asian Tour events. Now, this was recently. I forget the last, maybe it was the last International Series event on the Asian Tour. And I want to say it was like Graham McDowell who was talking about it. Maybe Charles Schwartzel. I don't remember. But one of the guys that was like a one-time major winner. And they said, we can't keep up by playing less. We need to play more. That's why we play these Asian Tour events. And I'm sure there was a contract component to it, but there isn't necessarily in every LIV golfer a desire to play less. They just now have different, more limited access to where they can play. So that, you know, I thought that was interesting. Nevertheless, so back to the segue before the main point, which was, okay, we just played in Saudi Arabia, so I assume they chartered a jet and flew everyone over to the Miami airport to go to Trump Doral. I assume that's what they did. Otherwise, that stinks. That travel stinks. Because you're going back, I mean, the good news when you go back in time, back in time zones, I feel like it's better than going forward, and you do have a few days to work with here, but those guys got to be darn tired. I know they're getting paid for it and compensated for it, but I just want to throw that out there. That travel schedule is not very good. And I've seen the LPGA schedule. Their travel schedule is insane. And this one component is particularly strange for the LIV guys. Nevertheless, okay, so we've got that event this week. And the team format is kind of convoluted. So it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. On Friday, you've got the teams that were ranked 5th through 12th over the course of the season. They're going to play one another. They had the opponent selection ceremony or whatever yesterday, where the 5th seeded team picked their opponent, and then the 6th seeded team picked their opponent, and the 7th seeded team picked their opponent, and then the 8th seeded team got whatever was left, and they'll play each other on Friday. And they play match play on Friday. So in each team v team matchup, there are three matches, two solo matches, one on one, and then a foursomes alternate shot match is the third match. Whoever wins two matches wins the thing. And then they advance to the next round where the top four teams are waiting. They will then pick their opponents of the ones that won. The number one seed picks whatever team they want to play, et cetera, et cetera. They do the same thing on Saturday. Follow me so far. All that pretty well makes sense. That's not too tricky. But then, the final day, they go back to stroke play. And they have all 48 players in the league, including the ones that won't have a job after this, supposedly. And they're going to have them play in bands of four. So every player is going to play, but the teams that won on Saturday are going to play in the A bracket, or A group, A flight, whatever you want to call it. The teams that got to Saturday but lost are in the B bracket or B flight. And then the teams that lost on Friday are the C-Flight. And they're all going to send out all four of their players. They're all going to play a stroke play round of 18 holes, and all four scores count. And whoever has the lowest score wins their flight. So the four teams that won on Saturday are competing for the big prize, whatever that is. And you had something interesting there until you went back to stroke play. And I think part of that is they wanted to have every team compete in the final day just in case it was a total clunker, because the format really opens itself up to that. I mean, this happens in college events all the time, where usually you have like play six, count five, play five, count four. You throw out your crappiest score, right? Well, they didn't want that here, I suppose. But it would have made for, I guess, better if you were going to do it that way. Because now you've got this potential to have a ridiculous spread between the teams. If just one player on each team has a dud round, then you're out of it. Which, I guess, in one sense is a tremendous amount of pressure. But it just doesn't seem to flow. Like, all right, we're going to do match play. All right, that's cool. That's interesting. That's different. All right, now we're going to do stroke play to determine the winner. It just, it's shoot yourself in the foot. I mean, I know that, and I've talked to a bunch of people on Twitter or X who are, I'll say live agnostic, right? Like, I'm not live agnostic, but they're live agnostic or like it enough to watch it regularly because either they bet on it or they just want to see some of the golfers or whatever it is, right? And I think it's pretty important to be able to have a conversation with someone you disagree with, or, you know, get along with people you disagree with. I've spent my entire life in golf disagreeing with people not because I'm hard to agree with, but just have natural differences of opinion. And I think you run into that in life. And I think it's a pretty good skill to be able to absorb that and not just, you know, turn a blind eye or close your ears to it. So these folks have kind of said, look, Liv's got no juice. Liv has nothing going for it right now. There's no one coming to the events. No one's watching. No one cares. And I thought Data Golf did a very interesting thing in their newsletter. I saw this via Len Hochberg, who's used to be the Washington Post, but now he does stuff for, I think it's Rotoballer. But he has good fantasy golf stuff, really good fantasy golf stuff. And he shared Data Golf's newsletter, which said the interest in the profile pages of LIV golfers has declined dramatically since they have gone to LIV versus when they, you know, 2021, 2022 as the transition for LIV to start. And then in 2023 went down even more. Basically, the only time people go to those players' profile pages is when they're in the majors. And obviously not all LIV golfers are in majors, and they won't be next year either. So the takeaway for me is you have this you have this product that only seems to spike attention when they play with everybody else. Because you're like, hey, what have they been up to? And that's even a small percentage of people that are people like me who love data, who get in the weeds on that kind of thing about performance and might be into betting, might just be into data, maybe both. And that's the only time that people care. I'm so curious how that lines up with Phil Mickelson's commentary yesterday, where he said that they were getting calls from all kinds of players from the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour that want to play and live, and that he was asked, they had like all the captains that weren't in the top four. So the teams ranked 5th through 12th, and Phil Mickelson's team is not good. And so he was on the stage and he said, well, you know, that each captain was asked about the player on their team, because each team had, or four of the teams had a player that would be relegated, even though Lee Westwood would be relegated. He's exempt because he's like one of three captains on the Majestics, the English team with also Henrik Stenson. And Martin Keimer would have been relegated were he not a captain of the Cliques, which is the most unfortunate, I think, of the names that they have in terms of their team names. Nevertheless, and they were each asked kind of, well, how do you feel about the guys being relegated. Chase Koepka, Brooks Koepka's brother, is up there. You know, of guys that got relegated. So Brooks answers and says, you know, I love my brother, obviously. Just got to, you know, got to play better. You got to earn it back. And some, one of the other captains talks about their player and is like, yeah, you know, really enjoy getting to know him. And then you got Kevin Na, who, I mean, it just feels like he's living in misery out there. And he's talking about Sewan Kim, or I forget who it was that was on his team that got relegated, but like, oh, well, you know, it's been really hard to watch, but even if he doesn't come back, you know, we'll be friends. And Phil Mickelson says about his guy, basically, I think, I don't remember who it was, maybe James Pyatt. I don't remember. Anyhow, he says, oh, well, you know, that spot's probably going to be filled before they have this Q school tournament that they're going to have in December. So he's probably not even going to be on the team. I mean, just cold blooded. And then says, you know, we've been fielding a lot of calls from PGA Tour players, DP World Tour players that are interested in playing in LIV, and there's going to be a lot more big name player signings. And they said this last, you know, the start of this year too. They're like, oh yeah, we're going to have all these players sign, and it's going to be the movement is happening. And then you didn't get that. That didn't happen. So I don't want to be completely dismissive of Phil. There's reason to be. I don't want to be completely dismissive of Phil. So if you want to take something of his at not quite face value, because that's not possible, but if you want to take it at some mild level of skepticism, I think you would say, okay, well, maybe they are fielding calls from players who see the potential end for LIV Golf coming. And that could be because they suspect there will be a deal made between the PGA Tour, the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, and the DP World Tour. Maybe they see that. And then they go, okay, well, everything we've been told publicly is that LIV's probably going to go away or be greatly altered in some fashion. It won't look like this now. So there might be only one more year of this. Got to cash in now. Maybe there's some players thinking that. Then there might be some players who just go, you know what? Even if this agreement doesn't come together and there's increasing skepticism, increasing doubt that the Saudis, the DP World Tour, and the PGA Tour will reach this definitive agreement, right? That maybe the Saudis will just go, all right, well, we're mad now. We're going to pump a whole boatload more money into this thing, and we're going to pay off a whole lot more people, and they're trying to capture that money. Or the third option is nothing gets done, and the Saudis just go, well, this stinks. I'm out. And they just kill LIV. They shutter LIV. So for any player that's still thinking about going to LIV, it's probably one of those three thoughts of, it's going away, they'll let me back in if they come to a deal. It's going away, I need to cash in now, because think about all the guys who are in their like late 30s and 40s that went to LIV, that cashed in and aren't playing well. Or they're thinking, I can get in now while they're desperate to prove some value and get my overinflated price or whatever it is. Who knows? But I'm more likely than not to be skeptical of what Mickelson says, given what happened last year. Who knows how that turns out? We did mention that they have planned what they're calling a promotions tournament, December 8th through 10th in Abu Dhabi, where they are currently playing the World Amateur Team Championship, by the way. Same golf course. Abu Dhabi Golf Club is the place with like the falcon on the clubhouse or whatever it is at the 18th, you know, at the 18th hole. And they have set their criteria to play. It's a 72-hole event, which I also find interesting. Like, your Q school's 72 holes, but the golf tournaments are 54. That, I know that's very nitpicky, but I thought that was kind of funny. Nevertheless, so they have these qualifying criteria. They have 3 days of competition, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So at least they're consistent on that part. Friday, they have whatever number of players that are basically in the top 200 in the world, top 20 of the world amateur golf ranking, the reigning winners of the five biggest amateur tournaments, and something else. There's some other criteria, but basically they're going to play on the first day, whoever those people are that show up. And by the way, if you're a PGA Tour, DP World Tour member, and you play in the promotions event, you're going to get fined, suspended, or both. So that's an interesting thing to add in there. So who shows up for that, knowing they're not guaranteed to get to play on LIV, and they could lose access to their primary tour just by showing up. I don't know who signs up for that, but I'm very curious who that will be. Nevertheless, they have that schedule as the first round, and then they're going to cut to that portion of the field down, and then the second day is another 18 holes, and they will introduce their next level of qualifying criteria. Major champions in the last 5 years, winners on the Korn Ferry, three tours, including the Korn Ferry Tour in the current year, winners on the PGA Tour and DP World Tour in the last 2 years, bunch of other criteria. Top leading money winner from the Sunshine Tour, Australasian Tour, and the Korean PGA Tour, something like that. And then they'll combine with the people who advance from day one. Then they're going to cut down to the top 16 players. So either you have a dramatic cut, or you don't expect a lot of people to show up. And then the final day, all those players will compete, and the top three players in the total combined score over 72 holes, because they're going to play 36 in the final day, gets a spot in LIV next year. What I find confusing is trying to square that up with what Mickelson said. Because Mickelson said, oh, well, we'll probably have a lot of people signed by the time we get to this promotions tournament. So my question is, and this has not been answered, but the question for me is, if you can sign players as soon as the season ends, which is Sunday afternoon, if you can start trading, releasing, and signing players, how does LIV guarantee that the three players who advance from this tournament and whoever wins the International Series money list get on a team? How does that work? Because if, let's just say Phil Mickelson wants to, I don't know what the contract situation is. That doesn't matter. Let's just say in a hypothetical, Phil Mickelson goes, I want to blow up my team, get rid of all three other players and find three new people, cut them out, sign three other people. And every other team gets what they want, who they want, what they want. And then these guys, these four new guys come over and go, hey, we're on LIV. It's great. Where are we going to play? And then LIV has to find them a team? Or how does that work? Or is each team only allowed to have a certain amount of turnover, and then they have a lottery for who gets these new players? I don't know. I don't think they know. I'm really not sure they know. They probably have it worked out in some document somewhere, but I'm not sure they've thought that out fully. So, I would think you would have the promotions event first, and then you'd let teams have a first crack at wanting to bring those players in and go from there. But what if they don't want those players? I'll take Dustin Johnson's team, for example. They've won everything over these two iterations of LIV. Why would they want to change anything? I know they changed their team a little bit this year, but why would you want to change anything? You're winning. So does LIV go all right, you got to take this guy because he's new and no one wants to have him? How does that work? I know that's very much in the weeds, very, very specific question, but it feels like things like that where you're okay, go back to the format of the team event. They got something here, and then they throw in something, and you're but that doesn't make any sense. And that keeps happening. But that doesn't make any sense part. And you get to this moment, you're okay, well, they still haven't worked out the kinks, and I'm not sure they're going to, or they're even really trying to. But at the end of the day, they're going to throw $50 million at a bunch of dudes, 48 players, this weekend. And for what? I'm not sure exactly, but as I was flipping through the channels on last Sunday before NFL kicked off, and they were showing the tape delay version of the Saudi Arabia tournament. And at the end, they had ceremony, or maybe this might've been online. I don't remember anymore. Probably was online. Actually, I don't think they showed this on the CW, but they have the end. And they have the ceremony where they give the trophies and people stand on podiums. And that's not a horrible thing. That's fine. But then they pan out They're on have a drone shot, and they zoom out, and there's no one there. There's maybe 20 people standing at the stage that aren't players with their phones out, making it look like, you know, stuff's happening. And I'm sure those people are invested in Liv. Like, that's fine. But then you pan out, pull out, and there's nobody else watching because there's nobody there. And it genuinely made me sad for a second. You're like, all this for this. So if and when Liv ends, that will be one of my kind of takeaway nadir moments where you go, oh man, that was it. You knew it was toast then. So anyhow, this turned into an episode about Liv, primarily because there's not a whole lot going on otherwise. The Zozo Championship and the BMW Ladies Championship finished their first rounds overnight in Japan and South Korea, respectively. Colin Morikawa had a great opening round in Japan, first round leader. Over in South Korea, Ashley Buhai shot 10 under par to open the tournament. They went deep in South Korea. Interesting leaderboard. It'll probably sort itself out a little bit more, but Ashley Buhai is not going anywhere. So she should be, she should probably be in it this week, but they've got a pretty good leaderboard there too. Then tomorrow, the Champions Tour playoffs start in Richmond, and right now ongoing is the Andalusia Masters, which have on the background in Spain on the DP World Tour. Kind of like last week, a couple good names. You had Wyndham Clark as your headliner. Ryan Fox is part of it, but so far the leaderboard is kind of stacked with guys who are taking on this new venue that are DP World Tour regulars, playing pretty well. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Two Off the First.